Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Kings of Queen City podcast. You know, we got a lot to talk about, honestly. It's been about 8 days since we recorded last. We had an amazing Thursday night football game. We've got another primetime game coming up. But first, I think we got to talk about last week and how electric that atmosphere and game was.
Yeah, definitely a lot of fun. The city of Cincinnati sometimes doesn't know how to like handle itself for big primetime games because we're not necessarily used to it. So it's a lot of fun. It gets pretty wild in there. So it was rocking. The Dolphins called two timeouts on a drive when they're backed up to like their own inside their own 10. That's all just crowd. So like, yeah, the crowd was a huge help for that game.
For sure. I loved just the aesthetic. I don't know what I was thinking it was going to look like, but I didn't expect that many people to wear all white, and they absolutely crushed it. And then you add in the lighting effects that they had before the game. I thought it was so, so cool. And that place was rocking. I mean, it was completely full 15 minutes before kickoff. Look, like, I really don't even remember a lot of games like that ever happening. So it was really cool. You can really tell that they really care about putting on a show now, and it's more of an entertainment factor, because I remember a lot of those games, even when they were good, you know, in 2015, it was still just boring. You know, the play on the field was exciting, but the rest of it was not a good time. So I thought they absolutely killed it. You have the Ring of Honor ceremony too, which I thought was cool. One thing with the Ring of Honor ceremony, it's like, it's fun, but it just goes by so quick. It's so anticlimactic.
Yeah, I'm gonna be honest, I missed it. Like, it was a halftime, bathroom line was a little long, so I walked in like at the end of it. But yeah, it's a cool game. I think the Ring of Honor thing, they've lucked out twice with it being on a Thursday night. It's definitely a nighttime type of atmosphere, like, you know, a primetime game, big moment. That just adds to it. But yeah, it's one of those things, like, it's super awesome, and almost like a party is pretty proud the fact that like Paul Brown, or not Paul Brown Stadium, Paycor, but like the Jungle's turned into a tough place to come. Like, it's not a place teams really want to come anymore. It's hard to play there. The crowd gets loud. They can cause some false starts or miscommunications, and that's definitely a newer aspect of Bengals home games over the last year or so. But it's right. It's super cool, and, you know, it feels good to have that type of effect on the game after, you know, it was a boring atmosphere for a long time, even when the team was great. Like, it's just they've done a lot to kind of revamp all that, and it's definitely paid off for them.
Yeah, and it's truly a testament to what, you know, the Blackburns and their vision of what the future of this franchise looks like. I think it's really cool. But let's talk about what we saw on the field. I think the beginning at least went exactly how I thought it should. If they wanted to win, you know, they started off fast. They were, you know, they get the ball first.
Took on the field.
Yeah. 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 And so it was very good. And then it kind of stalls out. I mean, they just haven't completely put it together. You know, if that's one of those games where, like, I thought they had the opportunity to put up 35, more than 35. I mean, they're leaving so many points on the board still. So it's like, I really wanted to see them kind of put that game away and kind of be that, you know, we're back. This is the offense we thought they would be. But at the same time, you know, a win's a win.
Yeah, that's like, you know, you can't turn your nose up at a win, especially how this season started. But yeah, like, there's still a lot of things they can improve on. Whenever they get the running game going, like, if it does happen, that's when I think you'll start to see more of these complete games by the offense. But it's also like, we still want to be this huge big play offense, which, like, we were last year and it worked great. But, you know, we see a lot of cover too, and it's just, you're not going to beat that over the top consistently. So it's more taking what they can give you. They wanted to bracket Chase and leave their best corner, Zaven Howard, on T. And, like, Zaven Howard's a damn good corner, but T T's a damn good receiver. Kind of got over the top on him on that deep one.
Yeah.
Like it if that's the way you're going to have to do it, like that's great. But yeah, once the running game can get moving a little bit, you know, the offense will look a little smoother.
Yeah, I thought the double team and bracketing by the Dolphins was almost obnoxious to a point. Where T.E. cooks, Xavier Howard. I get saying, like, you know, Jamar's not going to beat us, but come on now. Like, we've got another top 20 receiver. I'd say top 15. Top 15. I said some people would say, you know, I think it's crazy. I mean, they quadruple teamed him on that play. That's insane.
Yeah, it really was. But that's one of the big benefits that the Bengals do have is if you decide you want to take Jamar Chase away like that, like then T's just going to do the same thing to you. Like when you have two monsters like that, just makes it all kind of easier on that front. And O-line looked good. I wasn't as mad at the O-line as a lot of people were after the first couple games. Because I think a huge part of that is, you know, getting communication down. They hadn't played much together. But even bigger than that, like, it's a lot easier to play against teams that don't have a T.J. Watt, teams that don't have a Micah Parsons. Like, when they don't have an absolute freak at edge, like, it becomes a little easier and a little better to kind of game plan around and do some things with that O-line. So yeah, the O-line looked good. I think Burrow took one sack. He had tons of time to throw back there. It looked good at times. They just play calling sometimes wasn't great, or they'd stall out and do things. And oh, another one we touched on the atmosphere. The all white jerseys were sick. With the white helmets, it was sick.
I think we talked about this before, and I think it does look good. Why didn't they do it with – I know it's got to be some sort of reasoning with, like, money. It probably boils down to money, and they need ticket sales and – or not ticket sales, but jersey sales. But, like, I think it would look way better with their normal white uniforms.
I agree, right? But the money thing I'm sure is a part of it, but it's actually an NFL rule. So your second helmet has to be with a throwback or an alternate jersey.
I got you. Okay.
So that's okay. My thought process is whenever the NFL decides to quit doing all these stupid rules and you can have two helmets in general, I think there's a fairly large chance that the all-white could become our road jersey, like the road look.
I think that would be cool. I mean, the NFL, so I don't understand it. I don't understand it, but that's neither here nor there. Let's get a little bit – We're starting to get off track.
You knew it was coming. Just Jake and I, we're going to get sidetracked.
So. Oh, absolutely. But, you know, one really big thing that I don't think was talked about enough, that Dolphins offense, you know, they're the definition of explosive. They've got two of the fastest guys in the NFL, probably the fastest guy in the NFL. And, you know, they kind of shut them down.
Eli Apple did, although everyone wants to still clown him. Like, I think Eli Apple gave up 12 yards on Tyreek. Had the huge yards. He had two big catches on that last drive. He had that, like, 60-yard bomb where Cheeto gets his hand in there and Tyreek bobbles it, and that's one. You know, tip your cap. Like, that's a great play. Tyreek's a great player. He's going to make plays like that. Like, it's just kind of how football is. So, yeah, like, the defense in general, the first four games has been very good. It'll be interesting to see this week when they're going up against what people will consider the first elite quarterback they've seen. So it'll be interesting how that goes. But yeah, like even in a game where the offense probably had its best game of the year, like it still felt like the defense is the one that showed out.
I mean, yeah, they're winning game. Oh, real quick. UC Bearcat, Alec Pierce just fumbled, but it was recovered. Anyways, is it just one other thing? This, again, we're getting off track. I feel like there's been a billion fumbles in football this year.
Dude, there have been like three in that game going on right now. So
this game sucks. Dude,
Melvin Gordon has like five fumbles this year.
It's impressive. I don't know if that's true. I don't care.
They haven't all been lost, but yeah, he's putting the ball on the ground like once a game.
I saw that, but I again, If anybody wants to fact check that, they can. It's a feel. But anyways, back to the defense. They just look unbelievably fast. They just look faster. They're flying around. You know, one thing that I wish, like, why does Trey Hendrickson always have to rush on one side?
It's a good question. It's probably where he feels most comfortable. Because again, that the backside in general, you know, is where he's looking for that strip sack. Playing Tua for, I guess he didn't play the whole game. Hopefully he's okay. You know, like
they're idiots.
I mean, anyone that was watching the Bills game, like you know what a concussion looks like. He had jelly legs. Like he had to be pulled. There's going to be some repercussions for that. But yeah, hopefully, you know, Tua's all right, everything, and hopefully we see him back soon. But yeah, him being a lefty, it's odd for Hendrickson because he's not rushing his backside. But yeah, I mean, if that's where Hendrickson wants to play, that's fine. It's probably just where he feels most comfortable. And with that, like a Hubbard and Osai probably feel more comfortable on the other side. So it's probably just preference, to be honest.
Right, right. But I mean, at the end of the day, they won the game. It was close. I mean, they scored that touchdown late, but I mean, it was nice to get a win. You would have liked to see them not leave all those points on the board, but that is what it is. But we have a very big matchup to talk about. Probably, you know, it is the biggest matchup of the year for them so far in this short season, but Jesus Christ, another pit that, dude, this game sucks. God.
It's NFL Maction, baby. Oh,
I wish I was watching BG in Miami on a Tuesday right now instead of this. But we've got the Bengals and Ravens on a Sunday night football game. I'm very excited. I mean, I think this is going to be the game that we really figure out if this team's for real or not. You know, Lamar's playing very well. They're showing flashes. Again, they're kind of like us. They show flashes that they're really good, and then they show flashes of, like, I don't know if this team's putting it together. But I'm really excited for it.
Yeah, it's going to be an awesome game. Crazy stat is the Ravens have trailed for a combined 14 seconds this season, and they're 2-2. And it's another one. Their two losses are both at home and both squandering big leads. So it's a game, you know. Maybe it might not start out like, if it starts a little ugly for the Bengals, like, keep your head down. They're still in it. The Ravens might not be the best team with the lead, but yeah, I mean, it's gonna be a fun one because, you know, their running game hasn't been great, which is crazy because, like, that's what the Ravens you kind of think of. Bengals are still without DJ Reader, so you know that's a huge matchup. Is can the Bengals continue to stifle the run, and can they keep the Ravens' run game from getting going? And yeah, Lamar's playing great. That defense though, like it's crazy because if you look through like the AFC North this year, all the units per team that like you felt most comfortable with coming in have kind of been the downfall through four games. Like Bengals' offense, we were crazy confident in, and it's been, you know, the lesser of the two. The Ravens defense, which was finally getting healthy, and you thought it'd be back to what you've seen from them with their two elite corners, and that hasn't been the case. Like, get even more off track, but like the Browns, like you thought the defense was going to carry them until Watson came back. Like, their defense has been the reason they've struggled.
They've got the Browns have, I'm pretty sure, the worst defense in football so far this year.
Yeah, I mean, like, they've had moments they struggle. So AFC North in generals, yeah, like, it's one of those things. We should have seen it coming. Like, we've watched this division for too long. We know it's always going to be crazy and not what you expect. But yeah, I mean, I'm pumped for this game. It's going to, like, huge Sunday night football game for both teams. You know, winners 3-2, losers 2-3. And I would say it's a big game for the Bengals from the front of, it's really hard to win a division if you start 0-2.
Yeah, and it's also one of those, like, they're looking for revenge. The Ravens, okay. they were embarrassed twice last year. Yeah, I I was listening to Locked On earlier this afternoon, and 20% of Joe Burrow's passing yards last year came against the Ravens. That's insane.
525, baby.
Yeah. And so, you know, they're going to come out. I could see this game being chippy. I mean,
I expect it to be.
I
don't like them. They don't like us. It's AFC North football.
It's another one of those games. I just don't know what to expect. That Ravens offense, I think Lamar is a much better quarterback than people give him credit for being. I think he's one of the most electric athletes in the sport, and players, obviously. But you really never know what you're going to get out. In the last few times, last year, he didn't play the last game, but that first one, I mean, they kind of stopped and had a great game plan for him. And so it'll be interesting to see. I really don't know what to expect. I mean, I would hope that they're going to make them run the ball, because I like our chances, the athleticism on that defense. And plus, you've got the tight end killer, Trey Flowers.
Yeah, I'm not sure he's going to kill Mark Andrews. Andrews is an absolute dog, but we'll see. But yeah, like kind of a resident Lamar hater, like I think Lamar's a great quarterback, but I think he does have some downfalls people don't necessarily want to admit. His arm's improved a lot, which was always my big knock on him. He's become a better passer through this year, though. It almost is like it's hurting him. Like, he doesn't want to take the rushing yards he's given. There's times you're watching Lamar Jackson, and it's almost like he's trying so hard to prove to people that, and what everyone said is that he's not a pocket passer. Like, he's trying to prove that he is. There were multiple times versus the Bills, like he could have picked up a first down with his legs, and he's just kind of proven. He's like, I want to prove to everyone I can be a pocket passer. So I think that's definitely going to be interesting, because the other part people don't necessarily always like realize is this Bengals defense, like in its foundation, since they got Lou, this defense has been built to be a Ravens stopper. Like, they've built the defense. You build your team around, you know, the best team in your division. And like it was the Ravens for a couple of years. They built the Ravens destroyed us, our defense, for years with Lamar until last year. So we've kind of built around that. The defense has a lot of speed. I'm interested to see, you know, matchups and stuff, especially because Rashad Bateman's a question mark, like if he's gonna play. He's the Ravens' number one receiver. So he's their number one receiver, but like pass catching target, like it's Andrews and it's not close. But you know, they like their tight ends. It'll be interesting to see how we match up, because I really like Logan Wilson in coverage. So, you know, I like some of those matchups. I think this is another game you see Akeem Davis-Gaither a lot, just with his speed, have his speed on the field, which can help neutralize Lamar a little bit. Davis-Gaither, you saw it last year in that first game. He's a guy that can get side to side well enough to where Lamar's a freak athlete, but you're not going to neutralize him, but it can help slow him down and help take away some of those big rushing lanes out of the pocket.
Yeah, and one of the things that you were talking about, you know, with Bateman being out.
He's a question. He very well might play.
I mean, he hasn't practiced yet this week. He'd obviously have to probably be a limited participant tomorrow, but that's a walkthrough. I mean, I would say his chances are probably less than 50%. And if he doesn't play, I mean, I think their game plan's got to be trying to run the ball. And I mean, that's also kind of the way to beat the Bengals too, is like, you know, if you can limit them, the amount of chances they have to, you know, hit some deep balls or deep plays like that, you know, you do typically beat them, because they're not one of those teams that kind of takes what you give them. And I mean, Mixon has just been abysmal back there. It's been really painful to watch him. They're talking about an injury, but I don't even know if it's that, because he's missing wide open holes. I mean, it's pathetic.
Yeah, I'm not hitting the panic on Mixon yet, but He hasn't been as good as you want him to be, that's for sure.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see, too, how much cover two do the Ravens play. It's no longer Martindale to blitzed all the time. And
got it's hooked. A new DC we haven't seen yet. So
yeah, it'll be interesting. And
game within the game.
And the Ravens have a very versatile defense now, too. They've got two very good corners, and they've got two very good safeties, too. I mean, Kyle Hamilton was a top 10 player in a draft for a reason. Are you – you don't agree? You don't agree, Notre Dame guy?
I think Hamilton's a dog. I don't necessarily think they use him correctly, but, I think Hamilton's going to be a good player for a long time, yeah.
How have they been using
him? I don't want to ramble into, tons of it, but Kyle Hamilton's one of those guys. He's kind of like a chess piece. Like, you have him at safety, but you can move him around. I mean, he's a big dude. Like, he's tall. His main thing, though, is, he's not quick. They had a play versus the Dolphins. They had him, Vaughn, trying to get into the box and show a blitz, and then backing out onto Tyreek, and it's, he got cooked for 70 yards. I could have told you that was coming. That's all on the DC. You can't have that scheme and expect it to work. But, yeah, it's going to be fun because Ravens haven't been the blitz-heavy team they've been. Realistically, I think this game, as simple as it sounds, boils down to the Ravens are getting pressure with four. I like their chances. If the Bengals are stifling their front four because they're not going to blitz a ton. Yeah, so if their front four is not getting a lot of pressure, we're keeping Joe upright, clean, giving him a good pocket. I feel pretty good.
Yeah, for sure. So let's give our key matchups. You start.
Oh, quickly before I meant to touch on this, and I forgot. This might be Ronnie Stanley's debut.
Yeah, he has practiced in full 2 days in a row.
Yeah, so he's an absolute menace. He's a beast. It'll be interesting to see, though. He hasn't played football in 2 years. He missed a full year, played, half a game last year, week one, and then was out again. You never want to wish ill upon someone, but, 2 years off, it could be an adjustment period. There's questions on if he's still the Ronnie Stanley we think of. So that'll be – and especially with – it'll be him versus Hendrickson. That could be a welcome back, buddy. But also, Would you be shocked if Ronnie Stanley came in and looked absolutely elite? No, it wouldn't shock anyone.
I don't know if I would be shocked. I think I might be surprised. I mean, if he came
maybe a little surprised just because he hasn't played in so long. But Ron, he's a hell of a player.
Yeah, I mean, no one's doubting that. But you don't play for 2 years, coming off of two major injuries, and your first person back is Trey Hendrickson.
Yeah, I mean, man. That's one of those. It's Cordell Volson week, who's been good in my opinion, but coming from a smaller school, your first game's the welcome to the league. Here's Cam Hayward. It's tough, but that'll be a fun matchup to keep your eye on. Assuming it's Ronnie Stanley,
for sure. That is a good. That is a key matchup. But let's give two that are different than that. I'll let you start, Scott.
Jamar on whatever, either Peters or Humphrey, whichever one they decide to put on him. Jamar cooked him last year. Humphrey, that first game, he cooked him. That's the worst I've ever seen Humphrey play. Or maybe not play, but seen him look. Jamar was just giving it to him. It's going to be interesting to see because I'm assuming I think the Ravens are going to go kind of lock up Jamar gets Peters and Humphrey gets T or switch it, but that'll be interesting. I mean, it'll just be interesting to see how they match up to try to stop the Bengals horses on the outside.
I think the Jamar, I think this could be a T Higgins day too. Again, he's just – I think they're going to have some sort of game plan to really try to make sure Jamar doesn't beat them. And so I think this could be, a Tyler Boyd day. I think, they're so good outside that I think if they're going to want to win, they're going to have to beat them in the middle. So yeah, I think he'd be kind of like a TB Hayden Hurst, maybe get himself a little closer to 850 type of game. I mean,
what a play he had to start the game on Thursday.
Uh-huh.
That's what I want to see out of him. But in all seriousness too, like being a Notre Dame fan and like I watch Kyle Hamilton enough, if they want to play him more like a Jesse Bates, like out center field, you know, just play the outfield, which he did very well at Notre Dame. I think Kyle Hamilton's a guy that you could kind of shade T, and like he's got the size to match up with T on a jump ball. So yeah, that could be something we'll definitely see and keep an eye on.
Yeah, I think we're for sure going to see a bunch of cover two. They just match up so well with the good safeties, the good corners. I think it could just be one of those games where if you're going to beat us, you're going to have to dump it off. You're going to have to find Tyler Boyd open in the middle of the field. You're going to have to find Hayden Hurst open in the middle of the field. And we just really haven't seen that yet. You saw flashes of it against the Jets. You really didn't have to against the Dolphins because I don't know what that game plan was. But I think that's a very, very good matchup. It's kind of the key matchup to almost most of the games they've had. I think Jamar has been in at least one of ours for the last few games. I think my key matchup is going to be Joe Mixon versus that Ravens defense. You know, he talked about having that meeting with the O-linemen and all that. Let's see if it pays off. Because if they want to play very well on Sunday and get that offense going, he very well could have to get the ball, you know, 20, 25 times. Because if they're playing that cover two, you're going to have to find a way to beat it somehow. And that's one of the logical ways. I mean, he's getting paid $12 million or something like that this year. You shouldn't be averaging 2.7 yards a carry. And his offensive line is not that bad. You got to play better.
Especially with that. And I mean, I know we've said this forever, you know, when we're not the best play action team, but if you can get play action going a little bit, like Patrick Queen's a traffic cone. He will get jump a run and not be there in coverage. Or Patrick Queen has a lot of things. If you watch on film, you're like, what's he doing here? So yeah, I'd try to take advantage of him. But yeah, it's a fun matchup. Like Ravens Bengals, it's become more of a rivalry as of late. Definitely been some chippiness on Twitter between the fan bases.
Oh.
They don't like them, or they don't like us. We don't really like them. You know, it's going to be smoke in the air. Like, let's see who wants it.
One of my favorite things too, they're not playing the practice squad defense this year.
Yeah.
I think Justin Houston was hurt, so maybe they might call it a practice.
You didn't hear us complaining about the practice squad defense of I can't even name five players on our defense. And what was it, 2020, where they had like 400 yards rushing down the year?
I
was bitching about it, but
William Jackson
sucks.
No, Nick Vigil wasn't there.
Dude, William Jackson has been atrocious.
I can't even tell. Yeah, I don't know. Bates, Bell. But still, that doesn't matter. That
BW Webb,
horrendous. But I'm really excited. I'm really excited for Sunday. Another kind of key matchup: the Bengals versus primetime road games.
That you gave us, I wasn't a fan of.
Yeah. So maybe about 2 hours ago, Jay Morrison posted the winning percentage. I'll give you. Do you want to guess who has the best winning percentage?
Who has the best on primetime?
Primetime road games.
Since when?
Since 2000.
I mean, my first thought is New England or Pittsburgh.
Nope, they're in there. They're in the top 10. I'll get the whole list right here, but it's not those two. Do you have another guess?
I mean, after that, I'd think Packers.
The Packers are actually, it looks like, 10th or 11th.
I'm like Packers and Patriots are because quarterbacks only.
Okay, the Patriots were third. It's actually the Colts.
Since 2000, I mean, half of that's Manning and
yeah,
a quarter of it's Luck. So that kind of makes sense.
Right, right. And then you have the Jaguars have only played 9 road primetime games in 22
years. Probably all on Thursday night. Every single one of them.
They're 1-8. But yeah, the Bengals being 1-21. And we talked about that game that they won was.
I don't remember it. Like, I don't remember that. Yeah.
I mean, it looked like a very forgettable game. You had 2 field goals, you had 1 Andy Dalton touchdown where he threw 127 yards in the game. And then you had Ben Jarvis Green Ellis run for 125 and a touchdown. And then Wallace Gilberry with a defensive touchdown. That's it. That's all you had.
Last from the past, Wallace Gilberry. Holy cow.
Right. But I think this is another one too. Can Joe prove that this is a new team? This under his leadership, you know, they've won primetime games.
Yeah, like the primetime curses they feel good about. So
yeah, so can they end it here on the road and prove that it's something different? I mean, that's just something we're going to have to see.
The Ravens haven't won at home since, like, the first week in November last season. Losses at home this year. They lost, their last 7 games done the year last year?
Yeah. Like,
that's another one, too. I think this game will be interesting. Like, if the Bengals win, I think we're getting decently close to Ravens watch. Like, how are they going to handle that? After the Bills game, there were some heated people on the sidelines in Baltimore, players at coaches. I mean, they haven't won at home in a long time. If the Bengals can kind of take it to them, it'll be very interesting to see how the Ravens can respond to that.
Yeah, but I'm just really excited. We got to love the spotlight. It's fun. The night games are a good time. We haven't really had a Sunday night one in a little while. So I'm just excited to have the spotlight. Everybody's going to be talking about it. It's going to be a lot of fun. All right. And to finish us off, we're just going to talk about some miscellaneous things. Some soccer, some basketball, some baseball. But we'll talk about with the team that this city is going nuts about. Everywhere I go, everybody's talking about the soccer team. It feels like last year's Super Bowl run, honestly, in the city with how much people care about it and are going crazy about it. But FC, I think they just need to tie, right? Correct?
So yeah, they play DC United Sunday at 2:30. Every Eastern Conference team plays Sunday at 2:30. FC is in the playoffs with a win. FC is in the playoffs with a tie. And the only option for FC to miss the playoffs would be FC loses. And the Crew, so Columbus Crew, Orlando, ends in a tie. Then FC would be left out. DC United is going to win the Wooden Spoon this year, which is like a meme award. The FC won their first 3 years in MLS, which goes to the worst team in the league, the team with the least amount of points. So playoffs are hopefully on the horizon. It would be an absolute choke job and travesty if they missed it. But, this team's also never had played with any sort of pressure. The first time they've ever really had pressure on them was this past Saturday, and they lost to the second worst team in the East at home. They lost 3-2 after being down. They went down 3-0 in the second half at the 80th minute. Almost brought it back. The ref show wasn't great. But yeah, like the soccer team, it's fun to cheer for a winner. The new team on the block, cool stadium. Like they've definitely helped themselves a lot. Fan base wise, people are pretty into them right now.
It's one of those things too. I wish they didn't play on like channel 64 or whatever it is.
So they won't next year, but
okay. Well, still it's annoying. But it's really cool. I think it's awesome that, I'll always root for another team in this city. I don't watch a lot of soccer, mostly because I half the time you'll text us and it's like the 45th minute. It's like halftime of the game. Like, I didn't even know they were playing. At this point, I don't care. But it's really cool. Hopefully, if they made the playoffs, you know, people would start to care a little bit more. It will obviously be an away game, right? Because they would be the last seed.
Yeah. So if they would have won it, no, they won't be. They can finish fifth, sixth, or seventh.
Okay. So
either way, it's a road game because the last home game they lost. But you know, like, it's hard for me to be pretty upset with this team considering coming in, like, as an avid like soccer watcher and a pretty big soccer fan. Like, my goal was, like, let's come in 10th in the East. Like, let's have some meaningful games down the stretch. Like, just show improvement. It's the first year for a GM, first year for the coach. And, like, this team, like, they still have plenty of issues, but they're an exciting brand of soccer to watch. They're two strikers. Brandon Vasquez has 17 goals. Brenner has 15 goals. They're like attacking midfielders, like the guy that for non-soccer fans, almost like a point guard, kind of the distributor type role. Acosta has the most assists in the league. So, I mean, they played a fun brand. Like, they're a solid team. They're fun to watch, and it's fun to root for. I mean, like, they haven't been this since they've been in MLS, like the 3 years they're the doormat. So, you know, it's a huge step up for them. And they've done a great job. And, you know, as a pretty big soccer fan that likes to demean other sports, it does help when your big summer sport competition in the city does absolutely nothing to try to please any sort of the fan base.
Yeah, I think it's time to reflect. The Reds lost their 100th game for the first time since 1982, I believe, which is funny because I'm pretty sure the Bengals went to the Super Bowl that year.
Are we count theoretically?
Or they went
in the same year. Is that like the Bengals went to the Super Bowl that year too? Because we played in February and the season started in March.
I think it kind of counts. It's in the same calendar year.
W.
Yeah, we'll take it. But anyways, they lose their 100th game. We got there 3 innings late, and we stayed for 2 innings.
2 innings too many.
It was pathetic. And as I was sitting there, I was looking up at the score, the lineup card, scoreboard, everything. It's got all their stats. And literally every single one of them was hitting under 200 with like a less than 290 on base percentage. I mean, they are just atrocious. They are horrible. I don't think firing David Bell changes anything. If anything, you're just setting up the new manager to, you know, fail. Like, David Bell gets fired next year regardless, unless they somehow go over 500 and then he keeps his job. But, like, I think them retaining David Bell is more of a, we don't want to get a first-year manager killed in his first season.
But then, so you fire his whole staff and keep him so that he's going to get a new staff to fire him next year? And then do you keep the staff? Do you bring a new, like?
No. They're going to have, they'll have 4 hitting coaches in 6 years, which is bad. I mean, they haven't
been able to hit.
I believe this will be – no, this is only David Bell's second hitting coach. Right, I think.
I don't know. Zinter was a moron. That guy sucked.
I mean, this season was doomed from the start. No, not from the start, because they played well against the Braves. They took that series. But
– we were 2-2.
Yeah. No. Yeah, yeah. But when your manager – or your manager, your owner – comes out and just calls out the entire city, basically saying, have a little faith in us. Where else are you going to go? And
then tell you where they're going to go. They're going to go 2 miles down the road to the soccer team, which was putting a fun product on the field, like call a spade a spade.
Yeah. I mean, you've got 2 other teams in the city that are, you know, actively
fun trying. And actually having success. Like they're trying.
And their owner, I mean, the owners of the Bengals are, you know, doing a lot of things very well.
And it's another fun point of that is me being kind of nerdy about it. We've talked I mean, how often we talk about how much better the experience of a Bengals game has been recently and how much they're doing. Same with FC. TQL Stadium won the Stadium of the Year award throughout all of soccer. Like, we're not talking American. We're talking all of soccer, all Europe, everything. Like, that. So it's a newer stadium. It's super cool. It's an awesome spot. Like, you know, like, they're actively doing things to engage with the fan base, trying to bring people in, both those teams. And, yeah, I don't know. It's tough for me because, like, I'll always cheer for the Reds. Like, I'm not crazy into baseball. Like, if I think the Reds will be competitive, I'll watch almost every game. But, like, it's really hard for me to, like, sit and watch baseball, like, watch the Reds when they're awful. Like, I can't get into it.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't watched a game since August, mid-August.
And I think you're the most avid Reds watcher I know.
So. Yeah, I mean, I literally couldn't tell you. I know they were horrible for the month of September, but, like, I didn't watch games. I wasn't watching highlights. I mean, I just didn't care. And, sure, I mean, everybody talks about, oh, the future's so bright. And I think there are some very good players coming up. But, you know, what is it worth being good for 2 years when you're just dog shit for 10 more? I mean, they made the playoffs in the last 10 years. They made it twice. They made the 2013 wild card, and then they made the playoffs in an expanded playoff year during a worldwide pandemic.
Phillies was 10 and Giants was 11.
Phillies and 10, Giants and 12, and then they played the Pirates in the wild card game in 13, and then the Reds.
The Cueto game, I remember
that. Yeah, and then they make the playoffs in 2020.
Don't score a run.
Yeah, don't score a run.
Wait. I mean,
when the Castellanis bought this team, and I know, I mean, we're just beating the dead horse here, but they talked about how great of a product they were going to put on the field, and, you know, it's been horrible. They've been since 2014, they've been the third worst team in baseball, trailing only, I believe it was, I know the Tigers were one, and I think the Marlins. I think it was the Marlins and the Tigers. So
two programs.
But I'm glad the year's over. I'm trying to be positive. I think they've got three.
They have young pieces that are good.
Yeah, but I mean,
like I've tuned in and watched a Green start or a Lodolo start. Like, if I'm not doing anything, it's fun to watch some of the young pieces. I know they traded for every single shortstop that's ever played baseball at the deadline. Like, we only have shortstops.
Hold on. Isn't it nice that, like, they probably looked at it and they're like, we haven't had a good shortstop since Barry Larkin?
I think shortstop's kind of a cursed spot in this city where no matter what, you're going to get compared to Barry Larkin. And, like, you're not going to win that argument because he's Barry Larkin and you're not. Oh, but, yeah, like, I agree with you.
Dude, this game's so bad. I don't know why I decided to watch it. Like,
is it 3-0 at half?
It's 6-3. Russ just missed points. A wide open seam route to the tight end, like right behind.
Let Russ cook.
Yeah, I mean, that's horrible. I remember when I was worried that, you know, for the wild card and everything, that the Broncos could be there. I don't know.
I'm wrong about a lot of things. I called that one.
Anyways.
My buddy's a huge Seahawks fan, and, like, he's been vocal about how, like, he loved Russ, but he's like, he's washed.
Now he just fumbled the ball. I'm doing this. I got to get this off my screen. Back to something that is somehow worse than this game. That team, I mean, they've got some exciting pieces. Like, Ellie De La Cruz could be an absolute superstar.
The Marte guy?
Yeah, he could be a superstar. There's probably Matt McClain, the other shortstop. He could be good.
I don't know.
By that time, like, Jonathan India will be, like, 30, and he'll be on his way out. I mean, I'm just tired.
That's like my main snarky comment I like to bring up when I'm being, you know, sarcastic asshole is, like, yeah, so, like, I'll point it out to the soccer team. Like, they might have been the worst team in the league their first 3 years, but they actively spent money. Like, I can get behind a team that actively spends money and is trying and still sucks rather than a team that, you know, they're doing the exact opposite. Like the Reds have, like, they sold off everyone this year. The Mariners made the playoffs, and I think half their team's Reds damn near.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, Jesse Winker badmouthed the entire organization, which is fair. And then he went on to have the worst season of his career, and the fans hate him there. And I'm pretty sure now he's hurt. So
I think Geno had a good year, though. Yeah, Geno did like 30 bombs.
Yeah. It would have been nice to just – I loved Winker, so it would have been nice to have him. But I don't know. It'll be fun to watch Hunter Green on opening day next year, though. I mean, throwing 100-plus against whoever the hell they play. But
I mean, it'll be him and Lodolo probably every other year.
Him, Lodolo, and Ashcraft. Ashcraft is a lot of fun.
Ooh, yeah, he was good for being like a nobody. Not that sounds mean. Like a guy we didn't, I didn't know about. You probably did, but like, you know, he's been. Yeah, his numbers were solid.
Mm-hmm.
He was okay.
Well, anyways, we'll sandwich. We're gonna sandwich our little miscellaneous topics, little series that we're doing right here. We're going to sandwich it with another part of the city that's doing a really good job, and that's Wes Miller and the goddamn Bearcats.
Wes coming.
Yeah.
Wes coming, yeah. Baby.
Yeah. You get
what a recruiting class. What a job he's doing.
I mean, he's absolutely killing it.
I was a slanderer after the first year. By that, I mean, I was like, I get it's your first year. I don't care how little talent there is. Like, you're UC basketball. There's no excuse to come in sixth in the American, I think it was. And like, we're going to the Big 12 in a year. Like, you got to figure that out. And I'm pretty sure he heard me, because this recruiting class he's bringing in has been incredible. And to add to it, like, Isaiah Collier, like, he's a top five recruit, like, consensus everywhere. I've seen him at one, I've seen him at two, I've seen him at four. But like, UC's seriously in the mix there. Like, I mean, if you get him, like, I think it'll pretty much cement, like, UC will be a top three class in college basketball.
Yeah, and I think the Collier, you know, hype is very real. I've seen a couple crystal balls. I mean, they just got another crystal ball for a 2024 big man.
Who can reclassify? He could reclassify. Yes,
he could reclassify.
And I think his name's Flory Badunga. I could be pronouncing it incorrectly, but you have him. Obviously, you have the local kid from Taft. I think he went
Ravon Griffith. Yeah,
I think he went to Taft, right?
Yeah,
yeah. He's him.
He's at a prep school.
Yeah, but like, he went to Taft before, and then the other you have another one too. You have former NFL star Edrin James's kid. Jizzle James.
He's Jizzle. What an awesome name. My Alex Meacham, who does the Bearcat basketball podcast and stuff, he hates the name Jizzle. I think it's a great name.
It's a nickname. It's definitely a nickname.
Yeah. I mean, I even pitched the idea that when he hits threes, big white splash.
I don't think you can get away with it, but
and then it's just quite
funny.
And then it's just like, Jizzle with a splash would be tremendous. It would be tremendous content. I'm sure some, you know, person in the marketing department gets fired for it, but you know, we all get to laugh a little bit. But anyways, I think it's awesome that they're doing such a great job. Wes, you know, he's very personable. I think one of the really cool things that he's doing is really getting the alumni back involved. They're honoring, I think, the 93 and 94 team. I could be wrong. It's either 92 or 93 or 93 and 94. But you know, it's one thing that Mick never did.
I was gonna go a little off topic. Are they bringing back, because I saw them on like when they got those recruits, like, are they bringing back those sweet ass, like, just white and red ones jerseys? Just say the Cats.
I don't know anything,
because I hope they do. Those were fire.
I'll see if I can get some information. I'll get back to us. But
hey, those were beautiful.
Yeah, we'll see. But I think they're going to be – I mean, I'm pretty sure Arianton Page. He was the other one that took his official with Jizzle.
And I could be incorrect, but I think he is on the same team as Isaiah Collier.
Yes.
Like in a high school or a prep or whatever it is. I think they're teammates.
There are a lot of people that believe that they're a package deal.
Well, UC is the only one in both their top threes.
Yes. So
that's a positive.
I mean, it would be, could you imagine you would be getting a 5-star, two, you know, high 4-stars.
3.
What? Yeah.
Barnes and Page's up. Yeah.
Right. My bad. So 3, you know, very good 4-stars. I mean, and you wouldn't even be finished yet because you'd assume they're probably going to add a transfer or something somewhere. Like, people would want to come play.
The Flory Badunga kid could reclass. You still have a good chunk of the team from that'll be there this year.
Yeah, I mean, people like, you know, Skillings, he's going to be good. I think
Landers Nolly is a junior.
Yeah, he still has 2 more years left of eligibility, I'm pretty sure. This team could be very
This good. Is more excited than I've been for a long time about UC basketball. I'm a bigger UC basketball. Like, UC basketball is an abnormal basketball team.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess BG trumps everyone, but, like, that's like cheering for – they don't really count in many sports. So, but, yeah, like, I was super worried. Like, it was crazy when I took a step back and it was like, man, I'm more worried about UC basketball taking a step up in conference than football. Which would have been something if I told you like 6 years ago, you would have laughed in my face.
Right.
Like, everyone would have been like, you're an insane person. But yeah, I mean, that this UC class that's coming in, going to the Big 12, like, it has the makings of like UC could really make some noise.
Yeah. It's really fun. Again, this has been a very fun fall. There's a lot of fun things going on. Even though the UC football team, you know, they lose to Arkansas, they've still got a lot to play for. If they went out, you know, they're probably going to play in a New Year's Six Bowl.
Yeah, leave the American with no doubt. And then, again, a team that can go to the Big 12 and have serious success.
Yeah. I mean,
they'll win it, but, like, they could. They'll be up there with, like, TCU, Oklahoma State. Like, well, they'll be one of the upper echelon programs.
Texas and Oklahoma are still there next year.
On a technicality right now, yes, I don't think they're going to be. But
I think they have to be.
Dude, those schools can do whatever they want. Money grows on trees for them and their boosters. Like, they'll leave. It would be sick if you got Texas to come to Nippert. Like,
People are saying that the reason they want to get out so quick, they don't want Nip at Night.
Ohio State's never come to Nip at Night. I'm just saying.
Ohio State, they're a bunch of losers. All of them. Just a bunch of bums.
We pissed off half the people listening.
Good. I hope you're mad. Turn it off because this is pretty much the end of it. So
yeah, seriously.
But I think that's going to do it for us. Any Me and Scott podcast.
Off the rails.
You come for one thing, and that's I don't know what you're coming for, but it's probably not what me and Scott just went through there. But, you know, you went through the roller coaster.
But
the
thanks.
But thanks for coming. That's all we've got for you. I hope everybody enjoys their weekend. Go Bearcats.
Hooday. Hooday.